This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Friday, 23rd of June, 2023. And one of these very, very narrow market sessions yesterday, a lot of the AI-linked names, Peter, doing very well. The broader market not doing so great and actually falling back and erasing yesterday's gains in the case of the S&P, as you can see on slide two. But I saw a couple of stories cross the wire. There was an Amazon story that they're going to spend $100 million, Peter, with helping cloud clients with AI technology. Apparently, that was worth a $57 billion increase in Amazon's market cap. Sarcasm intended. It was just and you can kind of see from the Saxo theme baskets, a lot of them had pretty negative sessions, but they're of course the big names there and the big mega cap names apparently carrying the market yesterday.
Yeah, which has been the theme for so long now. Semiconductors were also strong, cybersecurity. Yeah, and it was a session where we actually broke below the 4,400 level in the S&P 500, which I think is a pretty key, it's a big handle there. We went below and then we bounced back, and Amazon was part of that pack or a group of stocks, if you will, that led that bounce back. And as I said, the CEO of the Amazon Web Services, which is their cloud infrastructure business, said two things. One, Amazon is not behind in the AI. We're taking a long-term approach to AI and we are not behind. Well, I always on the opinion when you have to state that you're not behind, it's because you are behind. But and then he said that what they're seeing is that this demand for AI will underpin growth for their cloud infrastructure spending. And then I think, John, the big story today is in Europe around the green transformation. I will be writing about this on Analysis of Saxo. We have Siemens Energy. We have actually talked about this company very recently because they, a month ago, raised their revenue guidance on extremely strong order intake for their power transmission and transformer stations. So everything that is related to the grid. But today they're coming out with a very, very different news. So the board of directors have been made aware of that they have quality issues in their onshore wind turbine business, which is the Siemens Gamesa division. It's almost a 10 billion euro revenue business, so a third of the total group revenue. They last year made a loss of almost around 600 million euros, and the rest of the business, the gas and power business of Siemens Energy, delivered approximately the same, but in a profit. So this is a division that has been dealing with rising input costs, just like we have seen for Vestas with higher steel prices. And now they have these quality issues, and it's related to the rotor of the actual wind blades rotating. And they say that it will cost them up to, or in the excess, and that's the scary part, they just say an excess of 1 billion euros. So what is that? Is that 1.3, 1.4, maybe somewhere between 1 and 1.5, right? And the scary scenario is it's 1.45, and then they just lower it down to 1, right? So, and then they say something that is very interesting. I think you will like this, John, or not like it, but it's, I think it's a story on this whole wind turbine. They say they fail to see the productivity gains in their production that they had expected, and they are very negatively surprised about these quality effects. So, this is not good because wind turbines is an integral part of the green transformation strategy in Europe.
Yes. All right. So we in FX, switching over to FX, we had two central bank meetings yesterday where they did surprise with the larger hike. One of those we were sort of trying to cover live during the podcast yesterday. The Norwegian Central Bank hiking 50 basis points saw a big impact into Nokia. That was completely unwound by the end of the day, as we see that rate sensitivity is not so great for Norway, and factors like a big sell-off in airspace oil and crude oil affecting the Norwegian krona. And then somewhat similarly for the UK, we saw a 50 basis point move. However, there was never much of a sterling rally, and I'll get to why that is in a moment. I just want to cover briefly the broad FX picture where we see the dollar resurgent. We see something like the Aussie dollar, which I've put a chart there on slide three. It really looks like we've reversed now. Of course, the local rally has been so steep, but we've only retraced about a half of that from the if you look at the lows today. But we have Aussie dollar challenging the 200-day moving average. I think if it's breaking down below that, we can say that it's sort of thoroughly disappointed on this attempt to achieve a breakout, and maybe we need to shift the focus lower. Euro, those trend readings, by the way, on the FX board, not reflecting a very weak euro this morning. That was impacted by these June preliminary PMIs. The French one was out the earliest, And we saw the services reading there at 48.0. That's a terrible reading because we've been talking about there's been a resilient services sector across Europe. That picture may be crumbling a bit here with something like that. 52.1 was expected and 52.5 on the prior number in May. And then Germany, their services number was a little bit lower, still well above 50, but it was the manufacturing dipping all the way to 41.0. A very ugly contraction going on in the German manufacturing sector. And I suspect a lot of that has to do with the long-term situation with energy. Even if these prices are very low at the moment, the long-term situation is another matter. And if I may just round out some arguments around why Sterling didn't get more out of that hawkish guidance and hawkish 50 basis point move, let's roll forward to slide 4 and we can see a few things here. So on the left, you've got the Euro Sterling chart, and I put it up, and that's in red, versus the 10-year EU-UK yield spread, which is in green. So pretty clear correlation there. The highlighted area was the chaos around the Truss Quartzing mini budget, which triggered fears of a sovereign debt crisis in the UK and obviously some flight of capital and a panic that was uncorrelated with those moves. But if you look at the very local price action, that spread was not altered by yesterday's decision. So on the right, I show you that, yes, we notched the market notched the Bank of England expectations higher at the short end of the curve, pricing in 6%+ now by the February 2024 BOE meeting. But that has not really altered these. Even the one-year yield for the UK relative to Europe did not even see an adjustment. So when they talk hawkish and all you see is maybe next meeting or two, but this is still going to end in a recession and lower rates further out, it just can't seem to move the needle and does suggest that an awful lot is priced in. And that, I think, Altea, is going to be one of your points as we look at as we look at the market, and you're talking about the risk that these high yields could see some competition in terms of asset allocation from in this market.
Yes, John, but I'm going to take you first on slide number 5. And the big question here is where U.S. Treasury yields or like global yields are going from here. And the right way to look at it is that at least until the end of summer, it's safe to expect central bankers to continue to be hawkish. So my expectations is to see more bear flattening of the yield curve, the front part of the yield curve continue to rise. And the big question is what is going to do the long part of the yield curve within this environment? The answer to that question might be that yields have a chance to move higher, especially if the economy remains underpinned in the meaning that we might have some sort of cool-off, but the cool-off is not going to be enough to hint to an upcoming recession. So I'm in slide 5, I put two charts, one for the 2 years that, as you can see, 2 years yields are on their way towards 5% following the expectations of rate hikes by the end of the year. And 10 years have been trading range bound between the 3.70% and 3.83%, but they definitely look, they might continue to rise. So where does that take us in terms of bonds and the yield that they offer? And I'm going to take you on slide number 6. In these tables, basically you see investment grade corporate bonds by maturity, 1 to 3, 3 to 5, and so forth, for the United States, Europe, and the UK. And what's striking to see, especially in the UK, is that on average, investment grade bond, so the safest bonds available out there with maturity between 1 to 3 years, offer more than 6%. In comparison, in 2022, the FTSE 100 returned 4.5%. And since the beginning of the year until now, it returned only 2.5%. So why would at this point investors buy the FTSE 100 when they can have a much safer investment in their portfolio that is yielding more, not only UK corporate bonds, but also gilts that right now are basically yielding 5%. Obviously, the difference is not going to be so striking yet in the United States and Europe. But at this point, John, I'm really looking at rotation risk, which probably is going to begin in the UK, where investors might sell stocks to buy into bonds. And I'm going to take you now on slide number 7. I've written a piece surrounding the convenience of UK gilts and UK corporate bonds, and this is the big take that I was talking about before about the FTSE 100. I basically put together a list of corporate bonds with very good rating, and in that list, it's very striking to see supranationals like the European Investment Bank with maturity 2025, just 2 years duration, offering a yield of 5.6%. And, you know, within that list, we have also NatWest. It's not a subordinated bond. We are talking about a senior bond with a single A rating, and it's offering almost 7%.
Yeah, some yield pickup achievable here. And the thing that has kept equity markets from being more impacted by that is clearly the long end not yet breaking out higher with these short yields, very inverted yield curves. So that I think would be the scenario the market is least prepared for if these longer yields come back in higher. A big change of topic here. Ole, you put in the slide here on slide 8, and the intent was to highlight Peter's piece out yesterday on agribusiness stocks as a way for, especially for those that are not used to all the difficulties of understanding the forward curve and trading in futures and so on and grains, can get exposure to. So I'll let one of you pick up the conversation on Peter's piece and the perspective on grains after that in your following slide.
Yeah, actually, regarding that, we're starting here on slide 8, but actually first of all just pop to slide 9, because obviously there has been a lot of focus on the grain market this past month almost. Seeing surging prices, the green sector has been leading the commodity sector higher. We are seeing some corrections now, but overall the grain sector remains fairly robust here. But a couple of observations. The fundamental outlook is obviously deteriorating. We can highlight that by the conditions in the U.S. Corn and soybeans and wheat. We can see they're falling off a cliff right now. That basically means that's a percentage of the current crop rated good to excellent, and we can see that coming down because of the dry conditions we're having. At the same time, so the RSI is starting to show, has moved into overbought territory, so that's potentially a little bit of a risk of a setback in the short term. And then I think positioning is very important, because we have, as we highlighted earlier in the week, I believe on Monday, the grain traders or grain speculators were woefully unprepared for that big turnaround, because we have been in a downtrend for almost a year. So they've been scrambling now for the past couple of weeks basically to adjust their positions. As of Tuesday, a week ago, the net across the major commodities were only back to, or major grains were only back to square. So during the past week, we would have seen an increase in positioning, and potentially we've seen most of that done by now. The question is whether wheat is done as well, because that's really where we've been having a big short position. So if fundamentals continue to support the wheat market, we'll continue to see this market move higher. And that moves us back to what you said, John, at the start. Basically, just looking at the one-week performance, you can see it is the grain sector that's still showing gains this week, whereas we are starting to worry somewhat again about the growth concerns and all the rate hikes we've seen this week and the threat from Powell to continue to hike. The market clearly doesn't like that from a demand perspective, and that's why we're seeing the losses this week. But still up quite a bit on the month, so it's still... It's still a strong month compared to what we've seen previously. And just finally, as you mentioned, the wheat market and grain markets again, it's a sensible sensitive area. But instead of actually looking at higher prices and speculating higher price on the grains, actually look at the solutions to higher prices. And that's obviously if you look at turn to the stock market and turn to the stocks operating in the agribusiness, because they're obviously part of the future solutions to some of these concerns about global warming and crop prices. So take a look at Peter's piece and find some inspiration there.
Couple of clues, Peter, the types of stocks, just a handful of names that are in what you're calling agribusiness here.
Yeah, it's a pretty complex industry, because it spans transportation, it spans storage, you have fertilizers, you have seed and crops business as well. We talked about it recently as well with Viterra, which is a grains storage, transportation, and trader owned by Glencore. It's merging with Bunch, which is also a big exporter and trader in soybeans in the U.S. It's a massive business. We're talking about a business that will generate $100 billion in revenue if they get combined. And the Argentinian government is very much against it. And I think some of the dynamics that are in favor of the agribusiness right now is the long, long, long period we have had actually with very subdued fruit prices and the weather conditions going forward, and with the world population still expanding. We still have a very large part of the world that is going through a rapid urbanization. India will increasingly be the talk of the town in commodities and agriculture as we progress from here over the coming decades. I think there will be a lot of upward pressure, but even more importantly, all this M&A activity is driving better unit economics over time. And then the final factor that we mentioned in the article is the data analytics. There's a lot of these companies will benefit tremendously, I think, on productivity and efficiency going forward for being just smarter in how you, when you plant, when you do all the seeding, when do you harvest, when do you water the different agricultural crops. There will be a lot of innovation, and Deere is one of those companies that we have flagged a couple of times, which is turning into a very value-added business with all the data analytics to farmers.
All right, interesting stuff. We go forward to the macro calendar. There's very little today. The rest of the day, we'll see those U.S. preliminary June S&P Global Manufacturing and Services PMI. They don't get the headlines, but there's a huge divergence in the services one there, which has been improving in well over 50 versus the official, not the official, but the ISM, the traditional ISM, which hit a new low recently, right around the 50 mark. So we can watch those, see if there's any market reactivity around that. We have quite a dollar surge on our hands. I think it's getting a bit spooky out there with the VIX at very, very low levels. Sentiment surveys showing that I think the contrarians must be pricking up their ears here. I saw the AAII, so a weekly investment survey. It's just one of many. There's no absolutes around these types of things, but it is pretty remarkable that the bull bear reading there hit its highest levels since the very week or so of the top. At least I think it was in the NASDAQ market in November of 2021. So it's a pretty stretched sentiment. A lot of this linked to AIs, as we've discussed. We'll see how the market closes today. Have a great weekend out there, and we'll be back next week with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.